Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Williams, and joining me today is Christoph Katzbeck.
Hey, Jay.
How's it going?
It's good. It feels kind of, it's cool to be back in here.
Yeah. You're jumping in, you're pinch hitting because Jeff is out of town.
Camping.
Well, I think I was also going to say something about it, like he quit because of what I said on Sunday.
Sorry, I stole your thunder. And
no,
yeah.
I thought about it or whatever. It is.
Wait, was this the Sunday where you said you threw him under the bus and said he? No, that was two Sundays ago. You said he made like the most controversial statement ever.
That was two Sundays ago.
That was two Sundays ago. That's right.
This Sunday, I said that he didn't invite me mountain biking.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, again.
Somebody said to me afterwards, they said, I was like, oh, I feel badly. Because, okay, full disclosure, that felt like it fell flat. And normally people are on board with that. That's an ongoing bit that I, you know, Jeff, who is like right. The kindest human being, you know, that he would ever, you know, not invite me or whatever. And just there's those running bits. And so I was wanting to do the illustration that just popped in my head, the illustration of paving a new trail. So my brain went mountain bike trail, and then I looked and I just saw Jeff, and so then I thought about that, and so
like,
I just
I'm
said
I'm gonna
it.
Throw him under that trail,
and and I'll throw him under the trail, yeah, and people it seemed like, so for the record, I was not offended. It did actually happen. I didn't make it up. I did. Jeff and I have had conversations about going biking together, and on Thursday or whatever day it was, he did send a message saying I'm going mountain biking, and I did respond with, oh, great, have fun.
Yeah, so yeah, I thought it was hilarious.
The pieces of it all happened.
They were there.
The intent was not, Jeff was not like leaving me out. And so if everyone, there's not actually a problem. Jeff is not actually, you know, he hasn't left, you know, he's not suspended. He didn't leave. He didn't quit. You know, he's just on vacation.
It's the new people who were at church this morning, yeah. Who maybe have never visited before.
Yeah.
Here's that, you like, well, here's our other pastor. He just never invites me mountain bike, but whatever.
That's true. I do need to be mindful that there are a lot of new people and they may not always get my humor. And I've said before that Northeast Wisconsin is very literal as a whole.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not so much with the dry humor.
And, if you would have made it a little more sarcastic, I think you would have hit better.
Probably.
Yeah.
Well, it is what it is.
For the record, Jeff is like the kindest human being in the world. And
But he
does not include. I have seen many not invited Jays. I don't know how to say the sentence. He has gone mountain biking plenty of times.
Oh, without me.
And not invited Jays.
Well, yes, one could argue virtually every time he's gone mountain biking. Yeah.
He's camping without you right now too. So.
He's camping without me.
Yeah,
right. He took his family instead. You know. Okay, well, we can move on from that, but I have printed my retraction. Also, people should know Jeff was not upset afterwards. He thought it was funny.
Yeah, so it's good. We're good. It's all good.
So for the record, in the future, if you ever hear me say something about Jeff,
take it with unless it's kindness, take it with a giant grain of salt.
Right. Yeah unless it's like, you know.
Unless you're saying something nice about him.
Yeah. But he did like 2 weeks ago talk about the, you know, he did make that controversial statement. So I thought that was funny. And so then I was talking to someone actually who was newer to the church after the service. And I said, hey, just so you know, I kind of gave that disclaimer because I thought, oh, they haven't been around very long. They may not know. And they said, oh, that seems to be like a weekly bit. And it's because the last couple of weeks it's come up. So
they've been here every week that you have. Yeah.
They've been here. It seems like every week I'm taking Jeff and yeah, I don't. Anyways,
that's the whole point of the podcast is to retcon the airing of grievances that happened during the
pretty
the
much
sermon. Yeah.
Well, and here's the thing about this sermon as we move and turn our attention to it, it was the feel good one in between what are two probably harder ones.
Yeah.
So then I ruined it with that bit, but this was supposed to be like a motivational kind of like building
like
up
rally.
And encouraging.
Yeah,
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 it's,
yeah,
it's supposed to be because it's what that's what the text is. You know, like it when I read Hebrews 10, 19 through 25, and when you read it in the context, it feels like the author is ramping up and is like, this is the author's big, you know, rallying cry, you know, like, therefore, because all this happens, you know, we have confidence to enter the holy places, you know, and then let's not neglect. Let's stir one another up. Like it's the, it is a little bit of a rallying cry.
Yeah. Well, it's, we've spent so many weeks in Hebrews talking about how, hey, look at how Jesus fulfilled this thing. And look at how Jesus fulfilled this thing. And look at how you had said it. And I, here's what's funny is I like to pretend I'm Mr. Baptist, but when you said the therefore thing, I had never heard that before either.
Oh, really?
I didn't grow up Baptist either.
That's true.
Right? And so I'd never heard that. I love that. I am totally going to use that in the future. That is
I don't know so if I good. Heard it actually before I got here. I'm trying to think. I think I did hear it in seminary. I remember something like that.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah.
It sounds like something you'd go to like camp. And yeah. You'd be going through something at like summer yeah. camp, and they would say that. I bet,
or like J. Vernon McGee walking through the yes. Bible or something. Yeah. Like it feels like that kind of a thing of like whenever you see a therefore, wonder what's it there for,
and then end of broadcast, and then
you know,
yeah,
I yeah. So it is an like it's just those are those key words that yeah. you think oh that gives me some kind of clue as to the intent of the author here.
Yeah, well, there was, so anyway, yeah, there was just such a building over the last couple of weeks and really over the last couple of months of just like, hey, look at, because that's what Hebrews really is just this like, man, Jesus is the better version of this and the better version of this, a better version of this. And then it just has this incredible moment in this paragraph, this rallying, therefore, because of all that, which is awesome because a lot of times it's really easy to get caught up in a lot of the like, oh, cool, look at how this ties into this, this ties into this, this ties into this. And it just kind of like, we go with the paradigm head, heart, and hands, and it just kind of sits up in our head or even kind of stirs into our hearts. But this one kind of feels like the, therefore go and do this, therefore go and be these people. And I heard that on Sunday. I thought that was kind of like your main point was this communal, we as a people, therefore are called to be this thing, right?
Yeah, and obviously anytime I get a chance to point out how often the scripture talks about our faith as communal, I'm going to do it because that's a constant reminder that we need. You know, we live in a culture that highly values individualism and autonomy. And it's an uncomfortable truth and reality that that's what we are laying down if we want to take on the life of Christ.
Yeah. Yeah. So that brings up a really good question, especially because we exist in a culture that lends itself more towards, and this is one of your big points on Sunday morning, we lend ourselves more towards the individual to the personal, you know, your relationship with Christ is a personal thing. It's an individual thing. And really it both is, but it is also communal. What would you, for somebody who's asking, okay, I've tended to process my faith more towards the individual side, what could I do or what should I do to begin processing it more through a communal lens?
Yeah, it's a good question. I would first say why it's not wrong to talk about faith in the personal sense too, because there's a bit of a pendulum that has swung back and forth. So imagine back, you know, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, 70 years ago, there was an idea that just because you grew up in a Christian family, you were a Christian, or just because you went to church, you're a Christian. And I don't know if you ever heard the phrase, I've heard it many times of just because you're in a garage doesn't mean you're a car. And
I've never heard that. Oh, really? That's a great, yeah. I like that.
So that was always used to say, hey, just because you're at church doesn't mean you're saved. That doesn't mean that you're walking with Christ. And that is true. So to the extent that we're talking about individual, meaning God has called me, like he's called us, but he's also called me, and I have a responsibility to repent of my sin and to follow Jesus, that I don't get to just ride the coattails of being a part of a church or anything like that. That's important and valuable. But then the pendulum swings, then I think overcorrecting on that side, and we lose sight of the communal nature of our faith. So to answer your question, when I think about like, how do we start thinking about it in those more communal terms? I think it's what this passage says when he says, let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works. So it starts, I think, with seeing sanctification as both my own personal sin, but also our community. You know, when you think about, well, what would I do? Think about any other community you're a part of. When you think about, well, what can you do to help that community thrive? You could probably think of a lot of different things. You know, if you're part of, you know, for years when I was coaching in youth basketball, and if there was a parent who said, you know, if there were parents who wanted, there were parents who just cared about their own kid in the sport, because they either didn't care about the sport or whatever, but all they cared about was their own kid. And then there were parents who thought more like the program as a whole, like how do we, and those are the ones who volunteer at the concession stand and they try to recruit other coaches, or they try to, they pitch batting practice to other kids. They do, like there's a sense of responsibility for the whole, right? And that's different than just feeling a sense of responsibility for me as an individual. So again, like if you're in the youth baseball program, there is a sense in which a person might just say, okay, my responsibility is to get my kid to the games and practices on time. And then when I watch the game, I watch my kid bat and I watch, like, but if you are thinking more communally, like I just want this to be a thriving program, then you're going to volunteer in different ways. And I feel the same way with the church. There's a way in which you go to church that I think we often do is like the person that just shows up to practice and to the game and just make sure that their kid is there. We show up in a very individualistic way. Like we show up, we listen to the sermon in an individualistic way. We listen to worship and participate in worship in an individualistic way. Like, do I feel like singing? Do I not? Do I like the song? Do I not? Am I engaged? Am I not? We might expand that circle to, if you have kids, you know, you might expand it to them of feeling responsible. But it's common in the American church to that's the end of the responsibility, unless you are serving in a, you know, particular role. And I would say that the beginning of that is to just realize that when you come to church, it is not an individual experience, that we are called to consider how to actually give thought to think, to sit back and say, how can I encourage the sanctification and growth of this entire church body.
Yeah, I love that. I love the illustration as your youth sports, just because I and many others are in the middle of soccer season right now. I know that you've got at least, I think Judah's doing soccer, right?
Yep.
So we have all three of our kids in soccer right now. And one of the things I love, and I love the illustration of, well, you've got the individual, and I don't fault the parent who comes and they cheer on their kid and they're there. It's awesome. But what I have noticed, which is really neat, is when I'm there and there's a parent, and I have no idea who this parent is, but they're like cheering for each and every kid, like by name. And I'm like, how do you, and it's just because they've paid attention, they're really excited. And so it's not even necessarily that they're like, they're not necessarily coaching, they're not necessarily there doing those things, but they are there for the team. They're there for, you know, they're cheering that person on, whether or not they're coaching. And I love that. As a parent, I'm just like, that's cool. And so I've actually, like, I've tried to, as like, as I see that, I'm like, oh, I want to be that person and try to, like, you know, because there's something cool about going somewhere for those kids, especially. And there's parents that are cheering them on that aren't their parents, and they're there together. And I think there's a cool illustration in that for us as a church to see, yeah, you may not be on the worship team, you may not be in youth ministry or children's ministry, you may not be doing this thing, but like, to constantly be aware of like what we are as a church, what we are doing, how we are serving, what we collectively are doing. There's something beautiful of like, you can be a part of that and not have to be in those positions.
Well, not only can you be a part of it, but I would argue it's the most impactful thing. So I'll give you an example. Somebody came up to me after the service. So I also outed Gladys in the service. Like, I felt like, man, afterwards I thought, oh gosh, I hope people don't think, because it's not normal for me. Typically, if I'm going to share a story.
If somebody was there, is that their first Sunday? They're gonna be like, Jay's going to get me one of these days.
Yeah. And I don't. I want to make it clear. Like, I will say that may have been the only time that I have done something like that, where I hadn't talked to the person. Unless it's like a staff person.
Few and far between.
Like, not just a, I think here's what I would say.
Yeah.
Like, not just.
Just a, yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes.
Like,
yes,
it'd
yeah.
have to either be my wife or, you know, a staff person or something that. But yeah. I don't just.
No.
You know, I've called out Joe Mutchler before. You know, like, worship leader, whatever, in a joking way.
You don't have to defend yourself.
I'm trying to alleviate fears of people that you're not just going to get randomly. But Gladys has been so faithful doing that for so long. And again, the illustration popped in my head and I just thought, you know what? I felt like I wanted to say it was her rather than what I would normally do, which is a more generic kind of like, oh, I talked with someone who, you know, talked about this. And the reality is whenever I use a generic illustration and I talk to the person afterwards, they say, you could have used my name. It's totally fine. So most people aren't. And I don't think Gladys was upset about it either. But here's what was cool about it was after the service, somebody came up to me and said, they had a Gladys story.
Of course they did. Yeah. Why wouldn't they?
And
yeah.
Several other people then were able to say, yeah, that happened to me. So I think that it made it more powerful because now all the people who have been impacted by Gladys got a vision. Oh, that's what we can do. And I can do that too. And I think that's what I'm talking about is just that idea of feeling a sense of responsibility. And what was neat was when I was talking to that person after the service, I said, you know, what's great about that is you don't remember what I preached about at all that day.
But you remember that.
You remember that. You remember that interaction. Now that doesn't mean preaching isn't valuable. It doesn't mean that it doesn't get, you know, seeds aren't planted. And we rarely remember actual sermons, but the fruit of that, it hopefully is helpful. That's why we do it.
Yeah.
But what mattered in that moment was that interaction, and that has a profound impact on people. And so it's not some kind of like add-on. It's a really important part of the corporate worship experience is people taking ownership and sensing a responsibility of and considering. Like that's what I wish I would have said it that way in the sermon because that's what the text actually says. But actually considering how can I help, how can I contribute to our family, like the whole church family sanctification and growth. I mean, that's basically what you're thinking about. And it's not just about like running a ministry. It's how can I do that in this moment? And you mentioned like with youth sports, I would say in things like youth sports, it's totally fine. We only have so much bandwidth. So there are definitely some of my kids' activities that I'm the parent that just gets my kid there. Like that's my contribution.
Yeah.
I get my kid there and I pick them up on time. But then there are others that I invest more deeply in. My point would be that if there's anything that we would do that with, the church should be the first thing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Right. Like so it's totally fine if you're just like, hey, I don't know anything about soccer. So I just drop my kid off and I cheer for them, but I don't even know what I'm cheering for. That's great. That's fine. You don't have to volunteer to be on the board or to ref or to coach or whatever. But in the church, we are all called to consider how am I going to contribute to the church family? And there are ways in which we're all called, and then there are ways that are more specific. So we're all called to give financially. We're all called to serve. We're all called to worship together like that. There's those participations. That's why I was saying like, you know, we're all the church choir. We're all of these things. But then there are specific ways that God will call different people to serve. They may be particular roles in the church, but it very well could just be particular conversations that the Lord has for you that day. And I think we just lose sight of the fact that God has a job for you. Like on Sunday morning, when you get up to come to church, you may not be volunteering in a children's ministry, or you may not be playing drums that day, or you may not have a specific role. And that's what I was trying to get at is when people say like, oh, I don't actually have a Sunday off or whatever. And I just want to get rid of that vernacular because the reality is we don't ever, like if you're part of this church family, you know, that doesn't mean you can't ever go on vacation. You can't ever, but you should know that when you get up on Sunday morning, God has a job for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you may not know what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's a part of just we have. So I've been thinking a lot about because I'm going to be preaching in a couple weeks here on faith, you know, sort of Hebrews 11, just thinking like what faith means. And it's a part of like going and being a part of the church family sometimes on Sunday morning is having faith that like that is going to be the better thing. Like, we actually think, I was just talking to somebody who was like, I don't want to go to church in the morning. It was a student, whatever, because, you know, it's my day off and I get to sleep in and, you know, whatever. And I'm like, man, so what you're believing in that is you're going to get more rest and it's going to be better for you to sleep in. But like, moving by faith sometimes goes, what's actually going to be better is doing what Hebrews, you know, 10:25, not considering, or 23, considering how to stir one another up, being a part of the church family, going there, like that actually is the better thing. That's the thing that's going to be great. So, I think like what immediately comes to my mind then is when you were preaching, you had mentioned building culture. So it feels like this is kind of a good opportunity to like segue. Maybe so something that I was thinking about this morning is, you were talking then, we have the opportunity to build a certain culture if that's the case. Like, what does it then look like to do that and be that and be God's family who is doing that? And you had mentioned a few things, but I would love to hear some more of like, if there was like an ideal culture that we were building towards as a faith family, if like we were the group of people who were like, oh, these people are this, like, oh, of course they are. That's the people that, you know, those are the people at Faith Church. Like, of course, you know, they're generous, or they're just like above and beyond kind, or they rarely complain. I'm one of the ones. Like, what would you say some of the culture building things you would want our church to be marked with, if that makes sense? Does that question make sense?
Yeah, I mean, we talk about this when we talk about the culture that we want to have. That's a kingdom culture based around those parables, which we need to do a better job. I'm really bad at like creating catchphrases and big signs and stuff that like remind people every week. But whenever we preach vision of the church, we talk about those kingdom parables and say like, we want this church family. And by church, we don't just mean what we do on Sunday morning. We mean our whole family, but it's not less than what we do on Sunday morning. Like, we don't want to minimize the importance of Sunday morning, which is why I mentioned the, you know, that passage is used as a guilt trip a lot. And it's like, but it's not a guilt trip, but it's also not like,
yeah, as a part of where the building happens, right? Like, you can't ignore
where the
that
church happens, where the body, yeah.
Well, the building of like those cultures, and like, oh, that, yes, that happens.
I mean, the physical building, where the building of the culture happens. Yeah. Well, when we're all together,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, think about your family culture of like your extended family. If you do, you know, Thanksgiving together, or you do family reunions together, or whatever you do, it's when everybody's together. That's when a lot of that culture building happens that then flows out into other relationships. When a couple of cousins get together over here, or siblings get together over here, but they're forged in these times that we're together. And so, yes, it's not a guilt trip, but it's also not swaying the other way of like, oh, well, that just means the assembly just means, you know, whenever two or three are gathered, you know, and so just make sure you're hanging out with other Christians. I've heard it preached that way in order to minimize the guilt trip effect. And I've just learned over the years that, man, if you're going to take a guilt trip from scripture, then like, I guess, you know, have fun. I don't know. Like, tell you, I don't want to lessen that. Cause if it's conviction, it may not be a guilt trip. It may be a conviction trip, which is for your good, which is to remind you, oh, I've been thinking about this in the wrong way. And so you think about the person who says, well, it's my one morning to sleep in. We've said this before. I don't want it to sound like a guilt trip, but the reality is, and I've experienced it too, the reality is we get up early for all kinds of things on the weekend. You know, like, don't anybody that gets up at 3 a.m. to go hunt in November in the cold can't tell me, oh man, getting up at 8:30 on Sunday, and you know, it's
right,
come on.
Right.
Hey, let's at least just be honest so that you can see, oh man, why is it that I value that so much? What am I either missing, or what are we doing wrong? Like I've said before to pastors, when I'm speaking to pastors about this very thing of saying, well, we have some culpability of why they dread coming to church. Like, are we actually doing something that is valuable? I mean, imagine if you're a parent trying to get everybody to come to family dinner, you know, like to have dinner together. Well, if dinner's miserable, they're not going to want to come. So like, I think we do have a responsibility to say, well, what are we doing when we gather together? Are we wasting people's time? Are we, you know, what are we doing? And so it goes both ways, right? Like, but anyway, what was the question?
the question was, we talked, it was nothing what no. you just said, but that was no. good. That was great. I appreciate I'm that. Glad. Yeah. That was
part of my charm.
Was the culture, like what kind of culture would you want so us to be marked
so
by?
So think about those kingdom parables. So here are the kingdom parables that we go through a lot. One is, small things become big things, the mustard seed. So we believe, so a culture that believes that small acts of faithfulness are what build into big, beautiful works. So what does that mean? That means that we're not a church culture that tries to launch a lot of big things. We're a church culture that says, no, what we value here is what Gladys does every Sunday. That's what's the most important thing. Not starting some big ministry with a logo and recruiting all these people to go say what we're going to do about it. It's the faithful small thing. So I think part of the church culture is a church that believes in those small acts of faithfulness, who are willing to just go and talk to that, have that one conversation or contribute that one thing or, you know, whatever. So that's a big one. We talk about the banquet, that everyone's invited. You know, when Jesus talks about the banquet where he prepares it, you know, the master of the house prepares it and he sends his servants out, and all the people they invited, most of them said, oh, sorry, I'd totally love to make it, but I can't. And so he goes out and eventually sends them out to the highways and the byways and bring in anyone. And so we want to be a culture that says anybody is welcome here. Like, we will go out, anyone is welcome to come in and explore who Jesus is. But it also means that we know that a lot of people are going to say no. So we don't cater to the people who say, oh, you know, I totally would love to do that, but I'm just not, I just can't today. And, you know, well, maybe if you just shifted the worship time, like if it's just a little bit later, and we're like, oh, maybe we should shift the worship time later. Or maybe we should change how we do communion because it made somebody uncomfortable or whatever. And it's like, no, everybody is invited, but few will come. That's what we see all the time in scripture. The fields are white for harvest, but it's also, the laborers are few. And so I see a culture that values the small things, the small acts of faithfulness, and a culture that welcomes anyone, but in our pursuit of Jesus and understands that a lot of people are not, it's just not going to be for them. It's a culture of the treasure hidden in a field. So that's another parable that we use a lot, of Matthew 13:44, that upon finding it, the man hides it and then goes and sells with joy and sells all that he has. So he buys the field. That we want to always be talking about following Jesus in a way that says it's worth it. Not through, which means like we're not going to do busy work. Like we're not going to talk about, we don't get up there every week and say like, okay, this is the thing. You need to be a part of this thing. It's like, if we make an ask like VBS, we make that ask, that people be involved in it in some way. That's an all hands on deck thing because it's worth it. Like, we want to make sure that what we're doing is worthy of the kingdom and that it helps people see like how valuable and what a treasure the kingdom is. So those are just a few things that I would say, like I would say that I would love for our culture, to be. And there's lots of other things that then flow out of that. For example, the small things become big things, understanding that me singing matters.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, you could say, well, you know, what's one voice? Well, one voice plus one voice plus one voice. That's a really tangible example of how small things become big things. So my decision to sing the song rather than just mouth the words, well, everybody doing that contributes to when that our worship area is just echoing with, the voices of the body, and everyone has experienced, oh, wow, that's really beautiful. Well, that's an example of small things becoming big things.
That's a great example. I love it. It's so tangible. It's so tangible. And I hesitate to say this, but I think I'm going to.
You go ahead.
So you go ahead and
I can always cut it out.
You can. Yeah, there you go. I feel like there's with the singing example, there you get a lot of people who say, oh, I'd love to be on worship team and sing. And my immediate question is, well, you should already be singing. Why should we put a microphone in front of you while you're doing it? You know, is like the question. And I think that's one of the things that we aim for, even with like our worship team, is the question isn't how beautifully you sing, even though we have fantastic people who sing, but the question is what we're doing on worship inviting everyone into this big group that's singing all together? It's like the highlight isn't the stage. The highlight is God's people coming together and singing together. And so somebody comes up to me and asks me, like, hey, I want to be on worship team and sing. That would be my question of like, okay, that's great. You should be singing on Sunday morning anyways. Like, that's fantastic. You sing. I sing too. You're not going to put a microphone in front of me because nobody's going to feel welcomed into singing by hearing me sing. The question then is like, what's the reason for that? And I think that's just a reflection of that idea of when we all come together and sing, it's beautiful. It's God's people coming together and singing these glorious truths of who God is. So I think that's great. And that specific paradigm was one when Sarah and I moved here. I worked in Christian radio beforehand, and this isn't me saying anything bad about Christian. I loved my time working in Christian radio, but Christian radio is a lot the opposite. We weren't a church either, so I mean, it's not like we needed to necessarily have this. But like, we're doing the big concerts, we're doing the big things. And there's a lot of really cool things that happened with that. But to see God move faithfully through, just to go back to the example of Gladys, just somebody who faithfully on Sunday morning is being kind and welcoming and hospitable to people, helping them feel welcome, asking God, who do you have in here for me to just like talk to? We hear so many amazing stories of how God uses that. And I think it's beautiful. So I love that culture that we're trying to pursue, because I do think it's biblical, and I think it's healthy and it's good. And I don't know. I could give another tons of examples with that, but
well, and so I think it's that. Happening, right? I mean, yeah. That's what I'm so encouraged by, is that people are believing that. And you're talking about the singing thing. Who hasn't? I mean, if you've ever been in the congregation and someone behind you is singing and they just have this beautiful voice that's just ringing out, like, tell me they're not having every bit as much of an impact there as they would have up on the stage with a microphone.
Yeah.
Arguably more of an impact, because it's just so beautiful and profound. And when, that's one of the things I love about singing the doxology right now every week. And I don't know if we'll do that. We're not commanded in scripture to sing the doxology every week, after communion. And, but what I love about it is the more that becomes a thing, the more people who in the congregation who have like choir backgrounds, for example, start singing harmonies with it.
Yeah.
And it's so great, because people, it just echoes. And so I want people to believe like it matters. All those things, all those little things matter, and they build up. And I think that culture is happening. We have so many people right now in the church who are under the radar, like Gladys. And now Gladys is no longer under the radar. Poor Gladys. That's going to be the thing she's going to be most bummed about, is that she can't be under the radar.
Right.
She's going to be like, but we have a lot of people like that. And here's what's funny about it, is most of the people that I can think of right now that go through my head, who I know every week have an impact on people around them, almost everyone that's popping in my head right now, I would classify as an introvert. I would classify as a person who is not super outgoing, not the center of attention. They're the person then who will notice the new person sitting in front of them and will in faith step out and, introduce themselves or talk to them. I see that every week. And I love it. And I think that's what's critical, is we get in our heads, oh, well, I'm not a singer, so that's not really my thing. Or I'm not an extrovert, so I'm not going to be the one that's going to talk to anybody. That's the enemy kind of discouraging. Like, the reality is bringing what you have and letting God do incredible things through it, that's what he loves to do.
Yeah.
Like, he loves to take our small little acts and the things where we're weak and show his strength and his power. And when a person who like, think about this. If you're a poor singer, now I'm not saying like scream in a way that's distracting to everybody around you. Like we don't just say like, we don't want to be a distraction around us or whatever. But I will tell you that people who do not sing well, when they sing, they free up everyone else around them to sing.
That's why everyone around me is singing so well.
Right. You are responsible, Christoph, for all those people, because they're all like, well, if Christoph can sing, if he's going to sing, then I guess I probably should. Think about when people sing happy birthday. Everybody sings happy birthday, and the better voices just get louder. Like, I just was there where I was singing happy birthday, and it's, everybody sings happy birthday because it's just what you do. And other people, like I said, people that are more trained singers, they'll do the harmony at the end. They'll do like whatever. And it's the number of voices. You see it in at a concert. Think about it, at a concert when people sing along and it gets really loud. Do you know how many bad singers there are in that concert? Tons. Maybe even the majority of the people. But there's something about communal voice that it all levels out, right? Because the stronger voices kind of like carry it, and it just kind of all levels out. And that's what's just so beautiful about it. And if you aren't a good singer and you're singing, then the person next to you or in front of you or behind you thinks like, well, then I guess I can sing. But if only the good singers are singing, then, you know, whatever. I don't know why we're talking so much about singing, but it is part of the culture.
Yeah.
And so I would say like the next tangible thing that I would love, and I'm seeing it already, is people talking to each other after the service. We've seen it in communion at times, of people praying for one another during that time, or just encouraging one another, being at the family lunch together. Like, we try to create these environments. We're just trying to create spaces for people, for the people of the church to be the people of the church. We're kind of like lobbing softballs in there to say, hey, go and bless somebody. And this is why we don't program things. We try to create environments for people to be able to give space to people. And so like communion in the middle of the service gives people space to minister to one another. Now, not everybody does that, but that becomes more and more the norm. And when that becomes the norm, and all of a sudden you look around, I mean, imagine a day, and I hope we'll get there, where during communion, you could look around and see 10, 15 people praying for one another.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now that becomes normal. Now it's not weird that I asked like, hey, can I just pray for you right now? It's not weird because lots of people are doing that around you. That's what it means for it to become normal.
I think it's awesome. That's where cultures are built, right? That's where we see the cultures built to stir one another up, as we're hoping to, and then go to our homes, go to our works, go to our different spaces and be light where we're called to be.
And think about, what would you want a visitor coming into our worship service to experience? And I don't know about you, but if I went into a church, it's common that you go to a church if you're visiting and you judge the sermon and the music.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of people do. And what I usually tell people when they're looking for a church is find people who are following Jesus in a way that inspires you and just latch onto them. And don't worry. I mean, as long as the preaching is biblical and as long as, you know, it's not a heretical church or whatever, find that church. And don't worry about whether you like the music. Don't worry about if the preaching like really hits you or whatever. But if people there are being transformed, then you want to hitch your wagon to people who are being transformed. And what I would love so much, it makes me so excited. Like when somebody says, when we ask first-time visitors, the best responses, there are some things that we started building in that now these are their best responses. Like one, people will mention how welcome they felt when they checked their kids in. That's a big deal. They'll mention how like they'll notice people singing, and they'll notice like, wow, like people really sing. And then whether someone interacted with them like before or after the service. Like those are three key things that I hear a lot from people. And less, I'm hearing what they thought about the preaching or what they thought about the music. And I love that. And I just think, man, so now imagine walking into a church where you felt really welcomed, somebody talked to you, and then you're seeing people praying, like during communion, you're seeing people praying for one another. You're seeing people engaged in like real worship. You're seeing people like that's what I want people to notice. So I guess the bottom line is the culture getting to a place where when I picture it on Sunday morning anyway, I picture a day, and I think we're getting there. I think we're almost there. And I think we're getting there. I picture a day where all of the other things that they notice are the first things they notice are their interactions with people, the seriousness with which they saw people worshiping, and their love for each other. Like that's what I long for. Yeah. Like I long for the day when if you ask them about the music or the preaching that they're like, oh yeah, that was good. Yeah, that was good too. But that the thing that stuck with them, just like what I said earlier about the person who's had the gladdest moment, what they remember about that Sunday and will always remember about that Sunday was their interaction with Gladys. They won't remember what I preached. They won't remember the songs. They won't know who led worship. They won't even know, probably know who preached that Sunday. That's what I long for is that those other things, our love for each other, our worship of God, connecting with each other, praying for one another, that those things are so striking that the other stuff kind of is like almost an afterthought. And if you go into a church and the only thing that you have to comment on is the preaching and the music, then that's probably...
Then it's content.
It's probably an indicator that it may not be the best place then for you. Because, and that's not to say like, oh, you go in and no, like I went into that church and nobody talked to me. Like, well, I don't know what to do about that. Like I have heard people say that. And then I'll observe and they bolt right after the service or they're like intentionally avoiding eye contact with anybody. And it's like, well, you know, got to help each other out a little bit. Like I can't expect that all these people are just going to come flying over to me. And then if that happens, that it's overwhelming and that's just a whole different thing. But if we're talking about culture, just thinking, so this is like my big encouragement from all of this would be that all of us and the ones who are listening to this podcast right now, just consider how can I contribute to the sanctification of our church family? How can I contribute to that culture we're trying to develop? And it may be just saying every Sunday, I'm gonna try to encourage somebody. Great. If everybody in our church did that every Sunday, everybody would walk away feeling quite encouraged and built up and prayed for. Like it would be awesome.
It's a beautiful picture. I love that you distilled it down to, and I do think that this is it. Is like people who take very seriously God, worshiping God, loving God, pursuing God, and then people who really take seriously loving their brothers and sisters. Like, take it seriously.
I feel like somebody said something about that one time.
Yeah, it feels...
So love God. You're saying if we love God and love others, I don't know, it'll come to me.
At some point. You'll get there. Yeah.
Maybe Tim Keller said that.
That was Mark Twain, I think.
Mark Twain. Just kidding. But that's so, isn't it funny how that's so true? Like that, I didn't distill that down. Jesus distills that down, right? And that's the culture. So you want to know what the culture should be? If a visitor comes in and what they notice is how much the people love God and how much they love each other, what else?
Yeah, what do you...
What else would you want?
Yeah.
And think about how often what people notice or what we think they'll notice or what we want them to notice is how good the preaching is or how good the music is or how entertaining the children's ministry is. You think about like Faith Kids, for example. All of our teachers know, all the helpers know, like, look, job number one is you just love the kids well.
Right.
It's not about content. It's not about entertaining them. It's not about like, you know, people will talk about like, I want those kids to have so much fun that they just beg to come back. You know what makes kids want to come back is where they're loved. They actually don't need to be entertained nearly as much as we, you know, think what they actually are drawn to. Now they may say they want that, but what they really want is to be loved and to be cared for and then to that we can somehow help them, like introduce them and teach them about this God who knows them and loves them. Like that's what we care about. So when a teacher's like, oh man, the lesson did not go well, I don't care. I do not care. Like, yeah. Did the kids feel loved and cared for? Did they walk away experiencing the love of Christ through the teachers and through their classmates? And did we point to him? Did we point to Jesus? Did we tell them like, this is why this is happening? Like, awesome.
Yeah.
It's okay that you didn't get through the whole passage, or that you didn't get through all the points, or you didn't get through all the, and that, you know, we just keep doing that more and more. And I think I'm excited about where, I mean, I'm definitely excited about where things are going, and then, and that being like buying into that kind of idea, that culture.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that it, man?
You think so? I
you got nothing else for me?
That's
you ask it. You ask more questions than Jeff does.
Do I?
Jeff,
you're welcome.
Well, it's not because Jeff talks more. Jeff just kind of sits there and smiles at me.
Well, who so doesn't want to figure out a way to just get an hour in a room with Jeff where he just, you know, right? smiles and throws out little.
He is a very right,
little
yeah.
statements, little questions,
little nuggets, you know? Of wisdom.
Yeah,
and yeah, we do. He's a. You know, everyone should know that we all have the greatest amount of admiration for Jeff.
Absolutely.
Regardless.
No matter what someone says on a Sunday morning right. from the stage.
And no matter whether he invites us to go camping with him or not.
Exactly.
We still love him.
Love Jeff, yep.
And that's really the point of this
that's
podcast.
What I hope you got from it, yeah.
Yeah. I hope that that's what, yeah. I hope that that's been helpful to you to know how great Jeff is. But also, obviously, this passage is about us doing this together. So reach out. Just this week, I got an email from someone who said, I want to be more connected. Can you help me? I love that. So if you're listening to this, or you know, you talk to somebody on a Sunday where they're saying, and I enjoy being here, but I feel like I'm having a hard time getting to know people or feeling like I'm, you know, a part of the community, then reach out to us. Have them fill out a communication card. Have them email us at connect@faithpeshtigo.com. Talk to us. Like, grab them on that Sunday and bring them up and introduce them to me or to Christoph or Jeff or Donna or whoever. And we will help them get connected. We love doing that. Because we obviously, as I mentioned on Sunday, you can't, stealing it from whoever I heard it from for the first time, but you can't do any of the one another's without one another. Like it's very
there.
I wish I could remember
right there,
which pastor. Yeah. I heard it in a sermon one time and I was like, well, that's cheeky and true. It's so true. So we need one another. We need one another, and we need to be able to stir one another up, and you need to be stirred. We also, not only do we need to consider how to stir one another up to love and good works, we also need to be stirred.
Yeah.
So that's why we need one another. So make sure you reach out. We hope that this has been helpful and encouraging to you. Until next time, grace and peace.